Hello, and welcome to Anime Audio Commentary. Today I'll be commenting on episode 10 of Dungeon Meshi. If you'd like to watch along, then start watching now. Alright, so last we left off, Lias and company interacted with that other party, and to be honest, I was kind of down on the episode just because, Namari is a traitor, refusing to help a friend and for money. That just kind of sat poorly with me, but I do think that the idea of eating a water elemental to regain magical essence, that was kind of interesting. And, it certainly was an ordeal. But what I find interesting now is that they're getting pretty close to the orcish settlement that the dragon was last seen in. So I'm wondering, surely they can't get to the dragon so early on, right? Or if they do, like, it's gotta be a fluke, you know? They encounter the dragon and then it gets away or something. Man. That's interesting. You know, that tentacles would be indicative of mechanisms and gaps and stuff, because that's, like, places they can worm their way into and live. I mean, that would indicate to me that this is probably a very dangerous path to take, considering that it's this gigantic spiral staircase and, the whole thing is teeming. I guess in order to confirm that suspicion, we can notice Lias's sword was shaking. You know, it doesn't do that unless there's something going on. Oh, he named his sword. Maybe I didn't catch that before, but that's something all right. Oh my god. Oh, that was rather brutal. I mean, it's no less than what the French deserve, I guess, these frog people showing up like that. They do have an interesting strategy, you know, disarm your prey, toss their weapons down the spiral staircase, and then, presumably in hand-to-hand combat, they would have the upper edge. I get the feeling that, everything's going to fall on Chilchuk, you know, his cunning. Yeah, here we go. He's identifying a trap, and, you know, maybe by activating it, he can sort of kill that frog. Oh, that is an interesting dilemma. You know, pulling on that weed or whatever it is, that tentacle, that will cause his hands to swell up, and, that's not good if your primary skill is lockpicking and trap defusal. Ooh. Well, you know, it was brutal enough that Marcel managed to, explode that one frog's head, but now Chilchuk is skinning it to essentially make, gloves. which, you know, desperate times call for desperate measures that'll protect him from the vine, but, man, I don't know if I could be able to do that. Like, that's kind of asking a lot. Man. You know, I'm reminded, I was going to say paradoxically, but no, this is kind of in line with Konosuba. Small people getting eaten by frogs. Although, these frogs are a lot more menacing, I would imagine, than the giant toads. You know, these guys have some degree of sapience, it would seem. You know, they're smart enough to disarm people before engaging them directly. Which, you know, they're not as maybe inherently threatening as a giant toad would be, but, I don't know. They're definitely scarier, if not as initially imposing. Surely they're not going to eat the frog people, are they? Because, I mean, this might be one of those edge cases where they might be a little too human-like to eat. Oh, God. Oh, this is somehow worse. They're skinning the frogmen to where? And they're eating them. Oh. Tentacle gnocchi. That's an interesting dish. Because gnocchi, like, that's like a sort of like Italian pasta, but it's made from like potato flour. I mean, I guess like if the tentacles are sufficiently starchy, they could make for a substitute, but I mean, eating the frogmen. I mean, maybe the men suffix is more indicative of their supposed sapience, but man. It's also telling that Marcel was convinced to wear the disguise by telling her she looks cute in it. I mean, that's a lie. I think they're just, you know, telling a fib to coerce her, but boy. You know, I guess when desperate times call for it, this is a decent solution to get through the tentacle forest here, but oh man, that's gotta be so disgusting. I mean, maybe it's no different from, like, you know, skinning an animal and wearing it as we do sometimes anyways with leather, but I feel like there's a bit more processing that goes into leather that sort of separates it from our minds, you know, that, you know, this was once an animal. I guess, you know, most of us aren't tanners. We don't do the tanning and the curing of the leather ourselves anyways. Uh-oh. Oh. Oh, that is incredibly foul. To have the frog blood congeal and stick to their clothes. Oh. I mean, Senshi's beard is inside the frog suit. Like, that's gotta be horrible. Oh. Interesting. That is some bizarre gnomish magic to use, I guess, essentially a painting like that. You know, I was kind of hoping we wouldn't follow up with these guys, because I don't particularly like them, but I'm wondering why. You know, there's got to be a reason, right? Alright, so that's interesting. You know, this is sort of something we already knew, that the dungeon, as it gets picked over more and more, becomes an increasingly dangerous place, as in order to find things that make it worth your while, you have to delve deeper and deeper. But what can you really do about that aside from garrisoning the dungeon, which I'd imagine would be prohibitively expensive? And then I guess there's also the issue of the orcs, who have settlements of their own, you know? Man, why are they acting like the dwarves were in the wrong here for tunneling and digging, you know? That's how you, you get one over on the dungeon, by making your own passages and bypassing otherwise dangerous things. I mean, to say that it's the cause of the expansion of the dungeon, maybe that's a bit too far-fetched, so long as it remains in dwarf hands. Alright. So that's curious. They seem to have a manuscript from the wizard who made this dungeon. So maybe that gives some sort of insight into combating it or otherwise nullifying it. Wow. So that's interesting. All these different races, the elves, the dwarves, the humans, are quarreling over the dungeon. Presumably there's a good reason to want it. Although, at this point, I can't fathom what it is aside from treasure deep down in it, but I mean, elves are normally depicted as not caring about that sort of thing. Alright. So I guess there's a fair bit of intrigue going on, you know, despite what is ostensibly the main story of Laius trying to rescue his sister, it would seem as though there's a whole bunch of other stuff going on, too. You know, people want to plunder the treasure of the dungeon, and the magic of the dungeon. There might be some people who want to rule the dungeon. Interesting. So this gnome here, he's trying to, I guess, maneuver things a bit. Alright. So I get the feeling that he's probably doing this for his own gain somewhere, or somehow. Like, if this blueprint for the dungeon does truly exist, then it would be at the very bottom. And you know, if you want it, you have to keep funding expeditions. And this gnome is graciously helping out this human guy. But something tells me he's kind of in it for himself. And I guess perhaps he's hoping to piggyback off of Laius and his expedition, even if their goal is ultimately different. Although, now that I think about it, you know, maybe the dragon would flee deeper into the dungeon if they do, in fact, encounter it. You know, that would be something. They would ultimately have to get to the very bottom in order to find the dragon and rescue Fallen. Okay, so what's Namari doing? You know, they were going to hire her again, but she seems to be kind of busy running an errand. I wonder what for. Because I get the feeling that it might be specifically to help out Laius and company, or to pay respects to Fallen or something. The Resurrection Office, they say. That's, I guess, kind of a necessary thing. So I wonder who Namari is looking for. I mean, I guess this guy knows it's Fallen, but I wonder why she's asking, because I think it's pretty much confirmed that she is dead, and her body's not accounted for presently. Alright, well, I guess they managed to pry off the frog skins, which, I'm kind of glad they didn't show that, seeing as how it looked rather disgusting to begin with, and they seem to have cleaned themselves up nicely. But I think what's interesting is that they're now in the Orc settlement, which is formerly a city, presumably a human city. And, you know, that little narrator was describing it as being warped by magic. I'm wondering if this is sort of like an M.C. Escher landscape. That would be interesting. But I guess the question is, I was going to say, where would a dragon be hiding out in a place like this? But, you know, I think we might have found some direct evidence, seeing as how those wargs were burned to death. Yeah, I mean, given that they're still smoldering, they can't be that old. Yeah, it seems like the situation might not be that good. You know, they were sort of counting on the dragon being asleep so they get the drop on it. But if the dragon's awake, you know, that's another thing. That's no good. And I guess, as Marcel brings up, there's the additional wrinkle of what if, you know, all the activity the dragon's doing that speeds up digestion, you know, that would be decidedly bad. Man, yeah, I'm wondering how they would get around this. Yeah, so I guess they've fought dragons before, which is interesting, you know. The team that they used to have was reasonably equipped, but that's no longer possible now. At least because Shuro and Namari did significant work to try and, you know, slow down the dragon, but without the two of them, it's just Lias and Senshi. And I feel like just based on the numbers, they're not going to be as effective. And what's more, they don't have Fallen to provide defensive magic either. So I guess no matter how you look at it, they're not really well equipped to fight a dragon, especially if it's already been awake. Yeah, it seems like the longer things go on, the more it seems like their plan was really half-baked to begin with. I mean, really their only chance, it seems like, was if the dragon was in a deep slumber, you know, maybe they could kill it or at least cripple it while it was sleeping, but if that's not the case, I don't think they can really do anything unless they were to, I guess, enact some sort of plan, like collapse a tunnel on the dragon or something to try and pin it in place. Now that's kind of interesting that Marcel's bringing this up, that in order to cast a really strong explosion spell, strong enough to stun the red dragon, everyone else would need to buy her a lot of time. So there's like a, I guess, a time component to casting magic. You know, it's not like Konosuba, because I guess that's the natural point of comparison right now, where Megumin seemingly just chants a spell for fun and rips off an explosion, you know. Marcel can't just do that. Alright, so Lias is using his noggin here. If they can't fight the dragon in a head-on confrontation, they need to use what few advantages they have to outmaneuver it. You know, they're smaller, they're more maneuverable, these twisting labyrinthine streets can afford some protection and perhaps wrangle the dragon just by virtue of it doesn't have total freedom of movement. And that's another thing, you know, Senshi's pot made of adamantine, you know, maybe it could be a form of protection against the dragon. You know, it might not be big enough to shield everybody, but it should be something. And that's another thing, you know, since she's cooking knife, that might be adamantine as well. And if it is, you know, he might be loath to use it on something he's not preparing to cook or butcher, but... I mean, surely, if you get a nice red dragon meal out of it, then it would be worthwhile to use a cooking knife for its... or rather, for an unintended purpose. Surely that would be worth it. Alright, so since she's, he's thinking ahead here. I mean, it was the big downfall last time. They were hungry when they fought the dragon, so cooking a big filling meal... You know, surely that is, in part, the solution. Yeah, so I'm wondering what they're gonna make here. They've got bread, they've got cheese. Oh, they've got the frog meat. Oh, surely they're not gonna make frog parmesan. I wonder if somebody's gonna make some silly statement like, oh, it's just like chicken. Cutlets to conquer the red dragon. You know what? I like the sound of that, even if it is frog meat. Yeah, you know, I don't blame Marcel for being a little bit hesitant to eat it, but, yeah, you know, I guess the idea of not having to eat monsters is kind of nice, but... You know, I could definitely understand the point of view that maybe eating that red dragon as revenge would be something to look forward to. You know, the way everybody's talking, this does feel like it's kind of coming to an end almost. But... Surely that can't be the case, right? This is episode 10 out of 24 or 26, you know? There's got to be more to this. There's got to be some wrinkle that happens that causes them to have to do more stuff. I mean, maybe that bit about all those different races vying for the dungeon was the setup to it, but how are these guys necessarily involved, I wonder? Oh boy. You know, it seems like their meal was well-timed, because, I'd imagine giant footsteps like that can only be the Red Dragon. And just looking at the sheer scale of this guy, seeing only little bits of him as he passes by windows. Man. It really is a massive critter. Well, you know, at least they have a plan. That's something. That's better than going in blind to try and tackle this guy head on. Alright, well that's it for this episode. If you've enjoyed it, then by all means, tune in for the next one. See you, Space Cowboy.